All right. I would like, if you allow me, to start with experimental philosophy. Please consider this sentence: the theory of relativity listens to a breakfast. So it would be very interesting for me. Who's thinking that this sentence is completely nonsense? And who's thinking that this sentence maybe is a bit odd, and maybe necessarily false, but nevertheless it expresses something? So who is the, say, who of you thinks it's completely nonsense? Okay, and who, because that may be the, you know, the indecisive, who thinks it is meaningful but odd or false? Okay, well, very, very divided. Very divided. I think it's very interesting. Well, I want to approach the topic of thought, let's say, from the angle of failed thought or not failed thought, so from the pathological side, so to speak. So, what this sentence is, without any doubt, or sentence like, for example, Caesar is a prime number, or colorless blue dreams sleep furiously. Those are category mistakes. They are grammatically perfect, correct, and they contain only meaningful words. However, somehow, the concepts involved in this construction do not fit together. And this leads to the characteristic oddness or infelicity of those sentences. So, the question I want to deal with is whether those sentences are nonsense and don't express anything, or if they somehow express something and can be the content, it can be a proposition, can be the content of a thought. And I would say a quick argument for the nonsense view is that intuition simply tells somebody who really says something like this is not competent in the English language. On the other hand, why not endorse the view that, the sentence maybe is odd, is strange, but it is false, because obviously the theory of relativity is not listening to breakfast. The theory of relativity cannot listen in. So it's simply false, right? But not necessarily meaningless. This is a view, let's say the common sense view probably is that it's nonsense, but it is more general view, like Quine was mentioned before, who think that, well, the sentence is perfectly meaningful, it expresses perfectly content, is simply false. So, I want to defend the view that is nonsense. It's really nonsense. And starting, you know, defending the view that it's really nonsense, and, you know, we need to reject the claim that it expresses something. I want to explain why it matters, or why this is important. I mean, why should we care about if this sentence express something meaningful or not? Why does it matter? There was Gilbert Ryan who maintained in his book Concept of Mind that the so difficult mind-body problem, and we had some talks before where we have made reference to the mind-body problem, that this is really kind of a bogus problem. It is a pseudo problem, and it can be overcome as a non-problem, as a non-issue, if we recognize that it rests on a category mistake. So the real understanding, if this is nonsense or not, or it exists nonsense in the sense or not, can help to solve long-standing philosophical problems. So Gilbert Ryan maintained that to say that humans have a body and a mind is like saying, she went home in tears and in the Mercedes, or I bought a right-hand glove, a left-hand glove, and a pair of gloves. So to frame or recognize the mind-body problem in the first place is to commit simply a category mistake. It's a confusion in thought. Because the concept of mind and body are of very different type and do not really stand in this opposition that is implied by speaking about a mind-body problem. To speak, for example, of mental causation, is to apply the wrong sort of predicate to mind, namely a mechanistic one. As if the mind is subject to analog mechanistic laws, just in the realm of the immaterial. So Ryle therefore proclaims philosophy is the replacement of category habits by category discipline. So the idea for him is, okay, we can just not in sentences put together. Yeah, we need to be careful what we put into the sentence, otherwise it's just nonsense. It is not true that everything which is grammatically correct and consisting of meaningful words is something which is truth evaluable. And another philosopher who considered it very important that we have to identify category mistakes to avoid trouble for thought was Bertrand Russell. You probably know the liar paradox. The sentence, this statement is false. This is one of the most debated paradoxes, I think, in philosophy and logic. And the trouble with the sentence is that it cannot be true, it cannot be false, because if it's true, then it would be false. If it's false, it would be true. And then, you know, so what is it? Because it obviously, it looks like it makes sense, right? This statement is false. We wouldn't have the trouble if this statement is true. We wouldn't come to a contradiction. But so what's the problem here, really? A lot of people invented new logics and so on, but I think this is not the right way. And Bertrand Russell proposed a solution. He said that the predicate, the truth predicate, so true or false, cannot apply, you know, need to be applied properly, cannot be applied to a meta-language sentence. What is a meta-language sentence? It's a sentence which speaks about another sentence. Because this statement is false, talks about itself, the truth predicate applies from the object level to the meta level. And this is a tight mismatch. You cannot apply the truth predicate to a meta level sentence. So this is a way through putting the proper restrictions on how you put words together, you solve philosophical problems. I don't think that probably the solution of Russell is the right one, but I think it just should illustrate how thinking about the status of sentences that look meaningful because they are grammatically and contain only meaningful words, how this status can help to solve philosophical problems. Also, philosophical understanding of category mistakes will reveal something about the relationship between thought and language. Why? The question is putting words together, grammatically correct, meaningful words together, is this sufficient to express a proposition, a thought? So the question is, you know, does language outstrip thought? And sometimes, as it possibly in the case of the liar paradox and other philosophical problems, kind of an empty and deceptive formal game of words. So against this background, what I want to defend now is the claim that category mistakes don't express propositions and therefore fail to express thoughts with content. So, first of all, I need to clarify a crucial distinction that I will use again and again in my talk. And this is a distinction between linguistically encoded meaning, which is a property of language, of sentences. And I will, when I say meaning now, I refer to meaning of sentences and propositional content. So the propositional content is something that is sufficiently specific so it can be thought. Content is then the property of a propositional thought, which can be expressed by a set clause. For example, I think that the PhilSoc is a great organization. So what's behind the fact the PhilSoc is a great organization, once it, you know, is transformed in the thought, this is the content. And so what I'm saying is there's a process. between from sentence to a thought, and what we can imagine is that there's a process where let's take a sentence. That is green. Okay, the sentence "that is green" makes sense, right? We understand what it means, but it has no content yet because we have to define what that refers to. That has no reference yet. So we need to come from the sentence, from the meaning, to the content. And this requires a process where we make all the references in the, the open references or ambiguities, we make them specific. And this is very important, this process. And we can imagine that this is the way I look at sentences or language. It's a process where we can consider a sentence as an instruction to form a thought, and the sentence is meaningful if it succeeds in giving the instruction. Okay, let's form the thought. You have a predicate, you have a subject, you have two words, and let's put them in the relationship. And the point here is then that in this process there may be a mismatch, there may be a failure because maybe the instruction is understood but the instruction cannot really be transformed into a specific thought, specific content. Okay, maybe I have not explained well when I say proposition or when I say propositional content. Maybe very quickly, a proposition. I almost use it interchangeable with thought, but the proposition is something maybe abstract, something shareable. I can use different sentences to express the same proposition, and I consider a proposition to be the content of a thought. Okay, and this is something which can be truth evaluated, so it can be true or false. That is green cannot be truth evaluated because I don't know what that refers to. So I need to have something more specific. And this is what the proposition is. And it can be shared because we all can understand different sentences in different languages can express the same proposition. Yeah? There's a chair or dice and stool express the same proposition. So with these terms and distinctions in place, what I suggest is that it seems unproblematic to consider sentences like Caesar is a prime number as being meaningful in the sense of linguistically encoded meaning. Sense of meaning. So, the like, that is green is meaningful. Also, we can say Caesar is a prime number, or the theory of relativity, it listens to breakfast. It is meaningful in the sense that it achieves to transmit a description, an instruction, to form a thought. So therefore, we could accept that category mistakes are meaningful in this sense, in this linguistically encoded meaning sense. But then the claim is that, or my claim is that it ultimately does not succeed to be transformed into a proposition, which is too evaluable, and it fails, so to speak, to settle in the content. Okay, so basically, in short, category mistakes express intelligible instructions to form a thought, but the instruction fails on the way to build a thought with propositional content. So category mistakes are meaningful but contentless. So this is the claim. The claim is, okay, meaning yes, but meaning understood pre-content. So before really on the content, there's no content. We cannot truth evaluate a category mistake. Okay. Well, to admit that category mistakes are meaningful in the linguistic sense, but insist that they do not express propositions, allows now to accommodate the following intuition. To say that a category mistake is nonsense Let me put it another way. I think that the category mistake is not as bad as other types of nonsense. Okay, so for example, take a sentence from Lewis Carroll's famous Jabberwocky, "Twas brillig and the slithy tove, be gyre and gimble in the wabe." It's nonsense, but it looks very grammatical. But most of the words have no meaning. So I think category mistake fares better than that, or certainly also sentence which is scrambled, which has no grammatical structure, probably is also less meaningful than at least a category mistake has the correct grammar, right? So, and then you can have totally meaningless expressions. So there needs to be something which takes care of this intuition, and if we admit that it's meaningful but has no content, we kind of provide this compromise. But what I want to say is, a category mistake at the end is not just something that is false. I mean, let's say that Caesar is a prime number. This is not just a false claim. In terms of content, has no meaning. It is no proposition. We cannot think Caesar is a prime number. We can think about the instruction. Okay, take Caesar, take prime number, and put them together in the subject predicate relation. But it doesn't make click at the end. So this is my the position that I want to defend. Okay. So, well, of course, there are those who think that category mistakes, and half of you think category mistakes do express propositions with proper truth conditions, and they express content with false. So, such a view, for example, is recently defended by, excuse my pronunciation, I don't know how it's correctly pronounced, Ofra Magidor. She's an Oxford philosopher. She published a very, I can recommend, reads a lot of fun, Category Mistakes, in 2013. And according to her, category mistakes are perfectly meaningful and have content, though they are always necessarily false and are characteristically absurd and infelicitous. Okay, so this is the claim I want to reject. And I want to underline, so Magidor provides a lot of arguments, actually, and very fine-grained. I just want to pick out two arguments and try to undermine those arguments. So the first argument I try to undermine is the argument from propositional attitude descriptions. I will explain what this means. And it is an argument for the meaningfulness of category mistakes. So on the left side, so that I have claimed, okay, I admit a category mistake is meaningful, but I just want to undermine the argument she provides, because if it is necessary for a proposition to be meaningful, and I undermine the meaningfulness, I can also undermine or can support or at least defend the view that category mistake does not express a proposition. So the second argument is an argument called the argument for metaphor. It is also an argument for the meaningfulness of category mistakes, but I want to show that you can have a view on metaphors and meaning and content such that it is compatible to say that the metaphor is meaningful but has no content. And so let me start then with the first argument. So now we just explain what this argument is. The argument means that sentences with embedded category mistakes are meaningful. So flat sentences with embedded category mistakes are meaningful. And from that it follows that the category mistake must be meaningful. Okay, let's take example. Peter said that the number 2 is green. So the claim is that, okay, this sentence makes sense. Peter said that the number 2 is green. Because this sentence is meaningful, the embedded category mistake, number 2 is green, must be meaningful. Because, and this I can accept, if you have a sentence where you have meaningless things, then the whole sentence cannot make sense. So in this way I accept that if Peter said that the number 2 is green is meaningful, then number 2 is green must be meaningful. Okay. And the same, for example, for Jane believes that the number 2 is green. Similar. So what we proposing attitude descriptions, I described it in the introduction a bit. Basically, is here we have belief and that, and here is supposedly a proposition. I deny that it's a proposition, and this is one of the arguments. I think it's a very good argument because indeed I accept that Peter said the number 2 screen looks like, you know, meaningful, and also because just it's just an indirect speech description of what Peter said, right? I mean. And Jane believes that the number 2 is green is even more plausible because, okay, she may believe something strange or something wrong. So I accept if really those sentences were meaningful, then we have to admit that the category mistakes must be meaningful. And now, but I think this argument doesn't work, or this argument is question begging, and now I need to explain away the intuition that it makes full sense what's there. And the reply is the following. So let's suppose that Peter said something different. Peter said literally, Bob is grimpolistic. Okay, a grimpolistic doesn't mean anything. And then obviously the sentence, Peter said that number 2 is green, is not better, not worse, not better than Peter said that Bob is crimpolistic. And we all have the intuition that Peter said that Bob is crimpolistic is meaningful, right? I mean, it's just the report of what Peter said. The problem is, this cannot be meaningful because crimpolistic is not meaningful. And how can we explain away the fact that we have this intuition that is meaningful? And this has to do with the, probably, you know, about the use and mention distinction. So one thesis could be that the number 2 screen here is not really used, but it's rather mentioned. So maybe it's something like Peter said that the number 2 is green, with this sign. Or, here is also an interesting explanation, is differentially used. What does it mean, differentially used? Imagine I visit the doctor, he tells me you have cystocis. Okay, so I'm shocked, I go home and tell my wife, the doctor said I have cystocis. I don't know what it means, cystocis, but well, he's the expert. And then the next day the doctor tells me, well, it was a joke, it was the 1st of April, you are completely healthy. And cystocis doesn't mean anything, that was just a joke. So you reported something, you used differentially, because what I told my wife, well, the doctor said I have cystocis, and I referred somehow to the fact that the doctor knows what it means. But it really doesn't mean anything. So this explains why this, we have the feeling that Peter said the number 2 screen is meaningful, but this can be just illusion or, you know, the wrong intuition, because in reality, you know, we have to put the right signs or the right way of using these words. But it's not the sentence as it stands, and after that, it cannot be a proposition. So this is one way to argue. Now, this was with Peter said the number 2 is green. Now let's go to the more plausible, I think, even more plausible sentence. Jane believes that the number 2 is green, because perfectly, you know, Jane can believe something crazy. We report here that Jane believes that the number 2 is green. Now, the answer would be to say, well, if you're really competent, I mean, you know, Jane is normally competent figure. I mean, she can't really believe that the number 2 is green, because, you know, the concepts just don't fit together. So she's probably crazy or incompetent or whatever. So in this sense, we have no pressure here to admit that this makes sense. The response from Magidor is the following. She says, well, there are circumstances in which this, you know, we can say, well, Jane is fully competent in the use of the words green and two. Fully competent, but there's, you can explain, you know, certain circumstances and explain this circumstance. And what she is proposing is, imagine Jane as a mathematical philosopher, and she has an understanding of the number 2 as the set of all pair of things. And then the number 2 would be green, or number is green, you know, if most of those pairs are green. Okay, just to... Jane is a normal person, she's a sophisticated mathematical philosopher, and she's competent in using the words number 2, and competent in, just has a different understanding, or more advanced understanding of those concepts. My reaction to that is probably Jane is somehow changing the meaning, right, of green and of the number 2, because this is not the conventional understanding. We don't understand the conventional meaning, the number 2, as we always said, of pairs of things, and green not as, you know, depending on if the majority of the elements of the set has a certain color. So my suggestion here is that on the conventional meaning, this meaning is really, this sentence is meaningless, and Jane just changed the meaning. And also you can change the meaning and then tweak all the category mistakes. If you tweak the meanings, you can make them disappear. So I'm also not convinced by this argument. Now, this is my favorite argument for the meaningfulness of category mistakes. It's the argument for metaphor. And it runs like following. So metaphors like Juliet is the sun, or the poem is pregnant, they have a meaning. All right? I mean, as a metaphor, they have a meaning. They're meaningful, they have even content, because I could say, well, Juliet is not the sun because she's in a very ugly character, from the character, very ugly person, and she's not the sun. Now, the problem is metaphors are category mistakes, right? Because, taking Juliet is not literally, Juliet is not the sun. Juliet is a human being, and the sun is a astronomical object, so there can be no identity, and it doesn't fit together. That's a category mistake at the same time. So in those cases where category mistakes are used figuratively and express something meaningful, or even in other forms of figurative speech like metonymies, like for example in the restaurant, say something, the waiter says, well, table 4 asked for the bill. Table 4 cannot ask, right? What's meant is, the person sitting at the table 4 asking for the bill. Okay. Again, this is a category mistake, right? Because the table cannot ask, but we understand what is meant. I mean, in this sense. So the intuition is the following. The intuition is that, okay, literally reading this metaphor is a category mistake. But metaphorically, they express something as metaphors, right? So it seems natural to distinguish literal and metaphorical meaning. So one could then argue that the sentence expressing a metaphor is a category mistake under a literal meaning, and a perfectly meaningful expression under the metaphorical meaning. So, however, this move leads, according to Maghidor, to an undesirable massive ambiguity of the metaphorical meaning. For example, we could say Stalin is the sun. Okay, and obviously if we have Juliet as the sun and Stalin as the sun, both are metaphors, we can understand it. It's not the same sense in which Juliet is the sun and Stalin is the sun. So we need to have extremely ambiguous metaphorical meanings, and this is a problem. So what Maghidor claims is in order to achieve its communicative purpose, the metaphor must be meaningful literally. So it means as a category mistake. So I'm sympathetic with the idea that meaning should be unique and not massively ambiguous. The problem is that Maghidor does not provide any explanation why is it a problem to have massively ambiguous meanings. But I think one reason could be that if a word has too many meanings, is too ambiguous, then it would lose kind of an identity between the word and its its meaning. So, if it means too much, it in the end means nothing. So, I can understand that we should be careful with massive ambiguity. So, in this sense, I support the idea we should avoid massive meaning ambiguity. But I grant that it must be literal meaning which is at work here, and I introduced before that we should look on the one hand on meaning, on the other hand on content. So what we could do is say, okay, well, and I admit it, okay, it can be meaningful as a metaphor, can be meaningful as an instruction to create a thought. So like that is green. But this does not mean that it achieves, to create this content. So if you look at this process, to come from the meaning to the content, what we could say is, well, what is ambiguous is not the meaning, but the content. Each word in the boundaries of its meaning can have a lot of content. It's like I am sitting here as a sentence. Well, until we know who's I, it doesn't make sense. But it has a meaning. It is not, you get the boundary, the word I, without defining exactly the reference. So, in this sense, we could say, okay, well, if the content is ambiguous, then we have a solution. Okay, we have a solution to say that it is category mistake is it's meaningful, but it has no content. But how? So the idea is the following. So I said all the words contained in the metaphor have a unique meaning, but they can have different contents. So depending on the context of use of the sentence, so we still have ambiguity on content level, but a harmless one because all possible content is bounded by the unique meaning. So a possible concern of massive ambiguity can be relieved. And this account has one important advantage over Marquis's account. It can account for the double intuition that on the one hand the metaphor is a category mistake, literally taken, and on the other hand that it has a content. Marquis has difficulties to account for this double intuition because for her all category mistakes are meaningful and express propositional content, but how can she then explain that some category mistakes are metaphors and others not? Because not every category mistake is a metaphor, right? For example, the theory of relativity is eating breakfast, sitting to breakfast is a category mistake, but it's not a metaphor. So, how can you distinguish both cases? So, the idea is the following. I need to explain what I suggest then is in the process from coming from meaning to content, we kind of modulate, okay, the meaning, starting from the most conventional understanding. For example, the most conventional understanding of the sun is the heavenly body. So when I read the sentence, Julie the sun, the immediate reaction to the sentence is, oh, this is a category mistake, because I start, considering as a referent of sun the heavenly star. But then, they say the meaning of the word sun is sufficiently flexible that it allows you to modulate the content. And then maybe I can kind of, have a more, looser use of this meaning in the sense that the sun is a very central element for whatever. And then Julia the sun would make sense. So what we see is we have a modulation of the content. And we find the initial modulation, the most conventional one, the most frequent one, doesn't make sense, doesn't fit. But the final one, we find one where we can accommodate, a proposition and a thought. And this is exactly what helps us to understand that on the one hand, a category mistake or a metaphor is a category mistake, but on the other hand, it makes full sense. So this is the way. To see this. So what I can do is I can insist in saying, well, a metaphor is meaningful, but it has no content on the initial, most conventional understanding. and I need to kind of, you know, tweak a bit the, you know, the content to get the meaningful meaningful expression. And so actually, I you know, we can say we dissolve the category mistake in the metaphor because we do the appropriate modulation of the meaning. And and this is a bit what I suggest is the response to this argument. So I don't see that we cannot say that the metaphor you know, is truth evaluable as it is as a category mistake, right? And what we find out is that okay, well, eliminating by modulating the content eliminates this category mistake. Okay. Those were two arguments that that I found very interesting arguments to defend that category mistakes are meaningful and have for content. And but I think those arguments are not entirely convincing. There are ways to explain certain intuitions that Magido maybe has not considered. And for me, the conclusion really is, let's look at this sentence, for example. The overheated candle would have been imposing a sharpened carpet's 14th copper gesture, but insignificance elects the first folded part. This is an example from Elizabeth Kahn. And, well, who has doubts that this sentence just absolutely doesn't make sense? So we, but Magido should say, well, okay, well, this makes sense, and this is the truth. Yeah, it's necessarily false, but, you know, it really, you know, going from more simple to more complicated examples, I think it gets more obvious how you know, completely meaningless doesn't make any sense. And so we must simply reject that category mistakes are meaningful. And another advantage is that if we would endorse the idea that category mistakes are truth evaluable, then we had no way, for example, to explain the liar paradox so simply by saying, well, it doesn't make sense. Because if the liar paradox, okay, this sentence is false, were maybe odd or whatever, but it would be just false, well, we would get, you know, contradiction. So, but I think that an account which can explain a broader range of phenomena is preferable, and to consider category mistakes as meaningless nonsense, it, you know, helps to solve those problems. So overall, my conclusion here is that the sentences involving category mistakes cannot express contents of thoughts. In the case of metaphors, we have well, two aspects. The metaphor is meaningless in the literal, more conventional understanding, and it is meaningful in the modulated understanding. So we can still insist that, okay, category mistakes are meaningless, namely in the, you know, more conventional understanding. And this, in my opinion, implies that it's well, we can continue to defend the idea that we really cannot think nonsense. And the best nonsense I try to explain are category mistakes because it's grammatically and it's meaningful words. But what is missing here in a category mistake is this last click where really the categories fall together in line and create you know, meaningful cognitive thought. Okay? And, well, that's everything. Okay.
What time did you start, Christian? I think we're overrunning a bit,
sorry.
But that means I'll start late, and we'll just run over into the discussion a bit. So, yeah, right, let's have questions. Okay, start with Jonathan. Keep your hand up, please.
I think you could make a rather
simple
argument that the meaningfulness of metaphor even stronger by just looking at the way in which a very great part of the language in which we're discussing this is simply accepted metaphor. I notice that we're talking about a mistake we're talking about the content of a sentence or a proposition. These are very physical terms applied metaphorically at first, and then so often that they become accepted. We've got, I believe, we've got a whole spectrum of propositional attitudes and descriptions, all metaphors as far as I can see.
A spectrum of problems.
A spectrum of problems. And a broader one at that.
Yeah.
yes, so in effect, we couldn't even discuss the question unless we accepted that metaphors can be meaningful, or as I think you put your finger on it, there's a difference between the category mistakes which aid thought and those which simply baffle it.
Right. I think there are some philosophers who even hold that our thinking is metaphorically true and true. So. George Lakoff, for example, says, okay, our categories are all metaphors. So we have like some basic metaphor schemes like being in and you know, high is better, and you know, and everything is based on metaphors. But I think I don't want to claim too much here or defending it. But I think the important thing what metaphor reveals somehow is very interesting. It is because it is the search, you know, we get a sentence and we must search for meaning. So in the account that I propose is a metaphor, you know, we have this double intuition. It doesn't make sense literally, but it makes sense metaphorically. And you know, at the end, what we try when we communicate is adapt the meanings such that, you know, we try to make sense out of what the other says, right? And this is our ideas, I think Donald Davidson also had this idea that we basically create languages on the fly, and we always adapt and try to modulate. And there are category mistakes where this works, like metaphors, and there are category mistakes where this accommodation doesn't work and where we have just nonsense.
Okay. Mike?
Two comments from completely different opposite spectrum, ends of the spectrum, one from Derrida and one from Quine. On the one hand, surely Derrida would tell you that all the meanings are indefinitely deferred, that you cannot explain the meaning of the term except by referring to other meanings of terms, and the whole thing becomes completely circular. While at the same time, Quine and Davidson, for that matter, would argue that we cannot communicate, and to the extent you mentioned this, without relying on the principle of charity. So, for example, if I were listening to some exposition in which goes blah, 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 Caesar is the prime number, blah, 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 I would say, all right, mathematicians needed to a label for some prime number and called it Caesar. I apply principle of charity to inject the meaning where apparently there is none. And I would suggest that, in fact, where the only distinction between the failure and non-failure to pass the meaning of a category error is just our imagination. There is no other difference. You can have any number of science fiction explanations of examples of this, like Eric Frank Russell in Next of Kin. He is alien language, which sounds just like English. The words are just like English, but don't mean the same thing.
I think charity is just an expression of our capability to modulate the meanings. And obviously we need to stop, because if everything is self-referential and, you know, endlessly referring, we have a problem. So we need to start from some fixed points. And the fixed points is that everybody has a kind of, for him, the most conventional meaning of a word, which must not coincide within the people, but they have a starting point. When they communicate, they start both from their understanding of the word, and then they try to, if it doesn't make sense what I'm saying because it's a category mistake, they try to move the meaning so that they can understand. It makes click. Okay, so I think this is basically explaining what the principle of charity is in terms of mechanism, right?
Yeah.
Okay, Peter?
Your basic story, I think, is that you can have sentences that are completely meaningless, and you can have sentences that are meaningful, and then you try and derive content, and you're saying you can have the meaning, but you can't have the content. So that the focus is on getting from the sentence to the proposition. Now, I'm quite happy with that as a story. When you ask for the vote at the beginning, theory arose as he listens for breakfast, I voted yes. And what was, well, you know what was going through my head, was I'm sort of battling away with, what, you know, sort of theory, are you kidding? And then, right, how can I make this true? So I start to sort of, you know, fixing various things to try and make some sense of this. I mean, I think there are two ways you can go in order to achieve this. One is the metaphorical route, you know, so Juliet is the sun, you say, well, no one thinks Juliet's the sun, but Juliet is the sun, and I'm going to marry the sun tomorrow, you know, that sounds all right. Well, the other way is you fix reality, and my scenario is I am a panpsychist Platonist about theories. Okay? So, being a panpsychist Platonist about Einstein's special theory of relativity, I believe there is an entity that's called this theory, and being panpsychist about it, I think it has rather more to it than you thought. You know? So you can do some listening, and then you can fill in the breakfast. You know? So you can. But my point is that I'm getting closer and closer to thinking I've got some content here, and my challenge is it's not an all or nothing thing, that your story is sort of either click, you get content or you don't, but actually what you do is nearly get content. And it's very important not to muddle up whether it's true and whether it's meaningful. I think at one point you were implying that Jane being a mathematical philosopher, that fails because it's not true that the number two is green, but it only has to be meaningful, you know, and for her it is pretty meaningful. If the twos are all the pairs of blades of grass or something, it seems perfectly meaningful. She's wrong, but that doesn't matter. But so you can, a lot of contrivance, you can get a proposition out of almost any sentence, and so I think sentences, I'm with Agador, I think.
Yeah, I think I must have did something. My wife told me a story more or less like you were telling. She's a musician and she likes reading literature and poems and so on. And she said, well, it's first a question of imagination. You have to make sense out of everything, every sentence which is grammatically correct and has meaningful words. And well, I'm not sure because maybe it is like that. I mean, I have no answer to it, but you may be right. You may be right. But for me, it's difficult. There are certain sentences which just, you know, it's very difficult to make sense out of it. So maybe it's a question whether the guy was right.
At the end, I totally gave up.
But what? But anyway, what you have to do is you have to tweak meanings, right? You have to tweak some. You're going to have to use the most conventional meanings, putting together. And then it doesn't mean meaningless. So you need to tweak and adjust meanings. And then the question is, when is this a completely new thing, or is still the, you know, the meaning of the same word? Just, so the question is, where's the boundary? They say, okay, now it's, you know, it's just completely different meaning. It doesn't mean, you know, it's too far away from the conventional meaning. That's my concern. So maybe it's not so clear cut, but I think there are clear cases. So for me, the theory of relativity, listen to a breakfast, is a clear case of nonsense, while there may be another one where I have not enough imagination, but if you explain me, okay, I could say, well, okay, you can adjust the meanings so that it makes sense, but
I'm thinking you can believe this, even if you haven't actually got a clear, you know, I say I believe this, and you say you haven't got a clear proposition there. I say, well, I think I have, you know, and you say you think it happened, so we actually disagree on whether the proposition is clear, but nevertheless, I'm believing it.
Yeah. Well, if I don't understand this,
it's your
but this means, okay, I think we are completely over the time.
Well, can I get squeeze one more question in, Alan, who had his hand up almost first?
Yeah. I think we're being too charitable. I think you're right, and Mogador, or whatever she's called, is you know, the argument against those patterns. But I think we do get into trouble about deciding whether a sentence is meaningful or meaningless. I agree that the test of whether it achieves a content is useful. But you're setting up a category of meaningful sentences which don't. And I think you know, utterances of sentences can fail in various ways. Some of the words can be meaningless, or the grammar is hopeless, or that there is a category of mistake there, or indeed the other failure that Russell had was the King of France one, where it fails to refer. And all those are failures of a sentence to achieve a proposition and therefore have content. And I think to ask whether those sentences are meaningful or meaningless is a hazy question, because you can decide whether the words are meaningful, and that's one criterion, but there are the others as well. And so I think you're right, and also right, to say that the test is whether it achieves a content in the literal meanings of the words. And where it doesn't, okay, we can start being charitable, but it's at least it failed as a literal proposition. Failed to achieve a proposition in any literal sense. And so you then decide, can you be charitable and make sense of it? And I think, you know, on your argument from metaphor, I would question whether it's helpful to say that there is a literal meaning, as it were. I think there's a metaphorical meaning that people find a way of understanding. It conveys some kind of metaphorical meaning, or it doesn't. And this is a separate test from whether it is literally expressing achieving and conveying a proposition, at least in paradigm cases.
I would be interested in discussing this with you, Kim, later on, because I think we are completely...
We are overrunning.
I apologize for that.
Oh, that's all right. This always happens after tea. We've got back later. Yeah.
Okay. The next speaker then is Irene. So yeah. I think...